Piano. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. It's time to join Joan Lewis, who's just got back from the United States, where she went to report on Pope Benedict XVI's 8th pastoral journey abroad. This 6-day visit by the theme of Christ, Our Hope, took the Pope first to Washington, D.C. and then to New York. And Joan followed him. So stay tuned as she gives us a behind-the-scenes peek at this trip. So Joan, you're just back from the United States. It must have been an exciting trip, your own country, the Pope in your own country.
Exactly. It was wonderful, exhilarating, personally and professionally satisfying. It really was an awesome 6 days. Obviously, I'm still kind of getting over jet lag, but I get over that fairly rapidly. It really was amazing for the very reason that you said, the Pope in my own country. Following him in Rome is one thing, seeing the huge crowds, whatever the event may be, but seeing my own people, seeing Americans welcome the Holy Father was in the awesome way that they did. They just embraced him. You cannot imagine. They never, ever wanted him to leave any event he was at, any venue, whether obviously the masses, the very beautiful masses in National Stadium in Washington and in Yankee Stadium in New York. The youth rally at Yonkers at Dunwoody Seminary was just extraordinary. And if just applause and warmth alone could have kept the Holy Father on the spot, he'd still be in the United States.
It's quite surprising in a sense, no, because he comes after John Paul II, who had great stage presence. He doesn't have that sort of stage presence, but he seems to connect with people, doesn't he?
He became, in his own Benedict way, he became the rock star. That word, believe it or not, was used quite a bit in the media. A different kind of rock star, just like you said, than John Paul. But Pope Benedict came off as warm. He came off as comfortable in whatever setting he was in. In fact, somebody contrasted the fact that, for example, Friday, the Pope was in this very, you know, austere international setting of the United Nations to give his speech there. And then Saturday afternoon, he's at this raucous youth rally in Yonkers with a former American Idol star and a singing rap priest and so forth. And in this kind of atmosphere, so different from the UN. Or even from, obviously, the liturgy, beautiful liturgy of a Mass. He seemed comfortable. Not seemed, he was comfortable in all of those settings. And that was something that I think warmed people to him immediately. They just sensed what I've always called Benedict, a gentleman and a gentle man. This is what they sensed in him, what they saw in him. And you know, Veronica, Americans did not know the Pope that well, because I've had people in the 3 years that he's been Pope come to Rome and ask me, Joan, what's he like? We don't have a big sense of him. And of course, I always wondered why they didn't have a big sense. We're here. We're in Vatican City. We cover all the events. We can see him every single time he's in public if we so wish. While there is excellent reporting from Rome, and there's TV, and there's radio, and there's pictures, and the print media, not all of what you and I participate in here or read or see is picked up necessarily by the media around the world. Now these people followed him for 6 days. They saw close-ups on television, if not in person. And so they do have a wonderful sense of this very warm, wonderful human being. The very excellent speeches that he can give at a higher intellectual level, if he's addressing a group of his intellectual and theological peers, if you will, and then just the people in the stadiums or the youth rally. The youth rally, I think it was, where he reminisced about his youth in Germany. And
he has very measured speeches, Benedict, doesn't he?
Yes, he really, really does. And his talks were interesting. There were probably not any deviations from the things that we would have expected him to say, whether it was to the Catholic Church as a whole, to specific groups within the church, the bishops or the educators, whether it was to the UN, which is the international community, or to Americans. Probably his words to Americans, maybe, at the White House, not at the arrival, there was no speech, but when he left, his remarks at the White House, he does know America. He indicated that even before he got on the plane to go to Washington. he knows America better now, and of course Americans know him. But he knows the country, he knows the vitality of the faith, he also knows the problem. Yes, over the last 30, 40 years, has church attendance dwindled? Yes, it has. The one thing I think he lamented most in the American church, after praising it to the skies, including his final words as he left, was that there were divisions within the church, or even within religious orders. I think that may have been in his homily at Mass in St. Patrick's in New York, that there, you know, should not be such divisions if we are all on the same sheet regarding the magisterium and so forth. They were generally measured tones. I would say if there were two surprises in the United States, one was something he did and the other was something he did not say. The big surprise to many people, certainly not to me or anybody who knows Benedict, the big surprise to a lot of journalists was the fact, A, that the Holy Father addressed the sex abuse crisis situation.
So many times.
And so many times,
and
exactly.
And under so many different angles.
And I was asked on an Italian television show, wasn't I surprised that he addressed this? And my answer was, knowing Benedict, I would have been surprised if he hadn't. He knows this is a grievous wound. The U.S. Church is not the only church to suffer this. It's the one about which most has been written and people still feeling effects. And the Pope met with abuse victims. He met with five abuse victims from the Boston Archdiocese. And this was unexpected. It was a wonderful gesture. One of the people came out and said very succinctly, the Pope gets it. So they prayed with him. I don't believe any parts of those conversations have been revealed, and that's the way it should be, according to me. But the fact that he talked about it and so many times was the best part. If he'd only talked about it once, it might have been taken as, well, he was expected to say something he did, and now he's dropped it. And he didn't drop it. He didn't mention it at the UN, of course, because that wasn't the venue. But he did mention it enough times to show, you could sense his grief, you could sense his concern, you could sense his shame as a priest, and that was one of the words that he used. So that perhaps was a surprise to many people. And I said there was something he didn't say, which was a bit of a surprise, when Benedict addressed the Catholic educators. And my understanding, by the way, when he addressed the presidents of Catholic universities, universities certainly that call themselves Catholics, exactly, and some of which are not considered to be Catholic in many, many senses. When the Pope addressed them, it's my understanding that he did summon the presidents of the Catholic universities in America, and apparently not any substitutes, but the presidents of these universities. It was expected that he would talk to them and chide them a great deal, a number of them indirectly, for not living up to their Catholic identity. Many people expected he would quote at length John Paul's exhortation, of course, on Catholic education, Ex Corde Ecclesiae, from the heart of the church. But he did not quote that at all. He was very gentle in his...
This goes back to what you were saying earlier, gentleman.
Yes,
yes.
He was gentle in his admonishing. And, you know, a parent who gets overly severe with their child, and corporal punishment, if you will, is not going to get as far as the parent who admonishes the child but makes them understand where they've done wrong and now let's do better. That doesn't mean he's going to come back to Rome and forget about this kind of stuff.
Or well, he has a sense of timing, doesn't he? There's a place for everything.
Yes. Yes, he really does. And I think that the people who were kind of cowering in fear that he, again, might come out with these very strong words, you know, sound bites for television, headlines for newspapers, I think that...
They were disappointed.
They probably were. But, you know, that's the media for you sometimes. And they have their own ideas of perhaps what the Pope could say, should say, would say. And he says what he wants to say.
You get the feeling that he knows that he's he's a guest in someone else's nation.
Well, you know, and we saw that a lot with John Paul. If you think back to the years when John Paul went to many, many countries where he did speak out forcefully, maybe about a dictatorship or something else like that. But John Paul knew that when he left a certain country, it could have been a Latin American country, wherever, when he left a certain country, he was the guest in the first place. And when he left, these people would have to live with his words. And if they were Catholics and might be followed even more closely because they were Catholics and have followed the Pope. But the one country where the Pope didn't hesitate to ever speak out and some of his most forceful speeches were in Poland. In his nine or whatever visits that he made to Poland, these were his fellow countrymen. Even when he left, he wanted them to think about his words, whether it was the faithful or whether it was the authorities, you know. But
getting back to Benedict, can you tell us a little bit behind the scenes, what happened behind the scenes as a journalist?
Oh, as a journalist, I mean, I think all of us could write our own story, and because we all went through the same thing. The listeners have to understand that in the United States, we are living the post-9/11 era, and the security is amazing. So the Secret Service was on top of every single thing we did. We would have to be swept, if you will. All of our equipment was electronically checked out and checked out by dogs. Television cameras, computers had to be on before we went through the sweep. But we'd have to do this 5-6 hours before an event. And at the youth rally, just example, they got us there after hours of being swept. They got us there. We had 4.5 to 5 hours to kill. So you sit on an equipment trunk, you get out your computer, you hope you have a long life battery, and you write. So long hours, long days, sometimes no meals, sometimes impossibility to get a papal discourse while you're on the field. If you can get an embargoed version, fine. Printed ones were not available in the press office when you left. So there were a lot of complicated things. But you know what? I wouldn't have had it any other way. I'd do it again in a flash. It was satisfying, as I said in the beginning, personally and professionally, to have covered this trip.
One last question. Did the American media highlight the two high points of the journey, the United Nations and Ground Zero?
Oh, yes. Oh, Ground Zero. How could I have forgotten that? Of course it did. And you want to hear something strange? The only time we did not have sunshine with Pope Benedict was Sunday morning at Ground Zero. The weather had been awful before and after his arrival. His 6 days in America were beautiful, except for that brief period. It's as if the weather it got gray and it got sad, like the place that it was literally covering. Oh, that got huge coverage, as you can imagine, in the United States, indeed.
And a big thank you there to Joan Lewis for sharing with us her personal impressions regarding Pope Benedict XVI's apostolic journey to the United States. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening.